In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 5% off your first purchase with code REBAGNEW. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAGNEW for 5% off your first purchase.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
This is the true story of a family man and pillar of the community.
Bob was, let's say, the man. He was very, very well respected.
His perfect marriage.
Jane and Bob lived the successful American dream.
And the dark secrets lurking beneath the surface.
He was known as Master Bob in this underworld S&M community that he frequented.
It's a tale that walks the fine line between pleasure and pain.
It's about pushing limits, having a sense about how far you can go.
And a brutal murder that leaves detectives baffled. Beware. Extreme passion can lead to shocking consequences.
Finish her!
Just beyond the limits of Detroit, Michigan's crime-ridden inner city lies one of America's toniest suburbs, Grosse Pointe Park. Two of the town's most well-liked and respected residents are Bob and Jane Bashara.
Hey.
Everybody in that community knew Bob and Jane.
When you finish up with that, can you go ahead and put it out on the table?
Yeah, absolutely.
They both were from the suburbs of Detroit, moved to Grosse Pointe, bought a beautiful home, had two lovely children. The Basharas were really the couple that everybody looked to and said, boy, that's a nice life.
It's delicious love.
By 2008, the Basharas have been married for 22 years. And their youngest of their two kids will soon be entering college.
So this was really supposed to be a time for Jane and Bob to really start enjoying one another and the fruits of their labor for the last 20, 25 years.
You want to take a seat?
Sure.
Jane is known as an outspoken and intelligent woman with a successful career as a marketing executive.
Well, Jane was the breadwinner of the family. She worked full-time, 40 hours.
She was just a very kind-hearted, warm, loving person, but her focus in her life, number one, was her family.
To our dear friends.
All right.
Cheers, guys.
Bob, meanwhile, is a well-known property owner with tenants all over the region.
He owned approximately 50 properties in the suburban Detroit and Detroit proper area. And aside from his job, he also was very active in the community, raising money for his schools and other causes.
Bob was, let's say, the man of the area. He was very, very well respected. He was always known as Big Bob. He had his license plate, Big Bob. He had his coffee cup, you know, Big Bob.
But just beneath the surface of the Bashara family's blissful suburban existence lurks a dark secret. Unbeknownst to his wife, for quite some time, Bob has been exploring an underground world known as BDSM.
BDSM stands for bondage, discipline, sadomasochism. And basically, people who engage in this kind of lifestyle, they either want to be a dominant or submissive. And it's about pushing limits, causing pain, having a sense about how far you can go. And very often they need it in order to feel sexually excited.
Devotees of the lifestyle arrange private gatherings where they can discreetly explore their unconventional interests.
In the BDSM community, there are what are known to as dungeon parties or play parties.
There would be music playing, there'd be food, there'd be drink, and these folks would come in and they would talk to each other, and there'd be different little rooms to the side where they would go and they would play.
For Bob, BDSM offers a stark and thrilling contrast to his conventional suburban life.
I think these parties opened Bob's eyes to this world and made him realize there were a lot of people that were interested in this lifestyle just like him. Hundreds of people.
Bob was immediately drawn to the idea of being a dominant, and he even created a new identity for himself, Master Bob.
A dominant, they run the show. The submissive pretty much does what they say to do.
So maybe this was the moment in time where Bob Becerra said, I don't have control financially at home. I don't have control of A, B, and C within the Becerra house. But outside, I can control whatever I want. I can set up this world and I can be Master Bob. And that's exactly what he did.
But the dungeon parties aren't enough to satiate Bob's desires. So he sets up his own private one-on-one through one of the BDSM websites he frequents, posting a listing as Master Bob, looking for a submissive partner to be his slave.
When you meet somebody on those type of websites, it's a given that they already have that sexual desire, a little bit deviant from normal, you know, sexual behavior.
In August of 2008, Bob gets a response that piques his interest from a woman named Rachel, a 48-year-old single mother with a voluptuous figure.
Rachel is a white female, very nice-looking young woman, very articulate, well-educated.
She looked very professional, long blonde hair, just put together well.
Rachel, however, has recently fallen on hard times and hopes to find a partner who can help move her life forward.
She describes herself at that point in her life as kind of stuck between a few different jobs. Financially, she may have had a little bit of trouble.
They begin to email back and forth, feeling out the situation and getting to know each other.
Rachel's personality was extremely submissive, soft-spoken.
And for Bob Becerra, the personality that he was trying to develop as the master, they really seem like a perfect fit. I mean, this was an opportunity for a man to have control over a woman. This was a woman who apparently was looking for a man to have some control over her life.
It doesn't take long for a connection to form, and they decide it's time for a real-life encounter. And Master Bob knows where that will happen. Over the past several months, he's been quietly constructing the perfect spot for a meeting just like this. His own personal sex dungeon in the basement of a building he owns.
The first thing that pops out at you is a bed, and there were candles set up there. There was this huge contraption. It was like a giant spider web type thing. There were all different types of collars.
For Bob and Rachel, the anticipation layered on top of this fantasy life that they both have must have been unimaginable. Nothing else mattered except for engaging in the sexual fantasy with each other.
And then it begins.
She could be on a spanking bench. She could be over the bed. She could be on the cross. And he would flog her.
Bob and Rachel embrace their roles of master and slave as they revel in the ecstasy of their forbidden union.
For Rachel, although she was the submissive and she was being, you know, tied up or chained or whipped, you know, many people would look at that and say, how degrading. But for her, it gave her, I believe, a sense of calm and a sense of peace.
But there's a lot Rachel doesn't know about Bob. and she's about to discover the danger of mixing pleasure with pain. It's the summer of 2008 in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan. Bob Bechara has just committed the ultimate betrayal of his wife, Jane, with his very own slave mistress, a 48-year-old blonde named Rachel. And now, after their first trip to Bob's private sex dungeon, the pair can't get enough.
No matter what, at the end of the day, she looked at Bob and really thought of him as the master. So although she may have been tied up and whipped and whatever, she felt emotionally that she was okay because she was with her master.
The two lovers are only a few weeks into their relationship, but as it heats up, Rachel finally feels that her life is headed in a positive direction.
It was much more than just activity in a dungeon. It sounds like Bob and Rachel were beginning to fall in love.
I'm so glad I met you.
But there's one thing that doesn't quite make sense.
He has explained in his online profile that he's a widower, that his wife has passed away, that he's exploring this lifestyle out on his own, and he's looking to meet other people.
What are you thinking about?
Rachel started to have some suspicions as to whether or not that was true. And so she had confronted him about this.
Just something I wanted to ask you. How did your wife die?
Bob realizes he can't continue to hide the truth, and he comes clean.
I need to tell you something.
Rachel quickly discovers that Bob Bechara is, in fact, living a lie. That his wife hasn't died, that he is still married.
I can't believe you lied to me.
It wasn't because I wanted to lie to you.
Rachel didn't want to be the other woman, and she was not comfortable with that.
I never want to hurt you.
He does his best to smooth things over.
Yes, I lied initially, but I said that because essentially my marriage is dead. That I'm not in love with Jane anymore. I want to begin this new lifestyle, and I'm taking action right now to end this relationship. We're working on getting divorced.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Bob shares the growing sense of emasculation and alienation he'd been feeling in his marriage.
It just always made me feel really like a second-class citizen.
And although Rachel doesn't approve of his lying and cheating, she decides to stick with him.
Can you forgive me?
So from her point of view, this was her new boyfriend. There was just this little messy side thing to handle that he was still married.
All the while, Bob keeps his family in the dark, afraid of what a divorce could do to his kids.
Bob Ashura had two lives going simultaneously. So he had been with his wife for more than 20 years. They raised two wonderful children. They had a great house. They both had good jobs. They were well-respected in the community. On the other hand, Bob was in this shadowy, seedy bondage lifestyle.
Over the next year, Bob and Rachel continue their forbidden romance. And in August of 2009, he sets his love slave up in an apartment right above the sex dungeon.
This was a way of her kind of moving on with her life and also moving closer towards them being in a committed relationship.
Whenever he wanted to be near her, he knew right where to find her, and she willingly accepted the place.
I see anything different?
Oh, my God.
Do you like it?
Did you buy this?
It's for you.
For some people who are submissive, they like the idea of not having to make a decision, of not having to be in control all the time. It's like having daddy take care of you.
And despite the risk of getting caught, Bob pushes his luck to the extreme. He and Rachel begin seeing each other openly.
It was surprising to learn that Bob Ashura was so out in the open with Rachel. She's introducing him as her boyfriend. He's making no effort to hide this. He's making no effort to deny it.
That is so thoughtful.
I think when Bob was in Rachel's presence, he felt like Superman. He felt like nobody could interfere with what the two of them had.
But a year and a half after their first one-on-one, Rachel's feelings of insecurity are creeping back into her relationship with Bob. Despite her master's assurances that he will one day leave his wife for her, Rachel gets the feeling he's grown bored with his love slave.
She had concerns that he was having conversations with other women online within this community.
She also knew, given his personality and his flirtatious nature, she was very fearful that he would be unfaithful to her.
Imagine how good it is now.
But Bob promises Rachel that she'll always be his number one, if they can agree to shake things up a little.
He apparently said, you know, the one way I can guarantee that it's going to be me and you is if we add another partner to the mix.
You can be in love with someone and still want to sexually explore other exciting options. So this could be just an indication that Bob's fantasies were changing a little bit. And because he and Rachel had this open, honest sexual conversation, he could raise this issue with her and see how she felt about it.
At first, Rachel isn't so sure. But her love for Bob is so strong and her role as his slave so fulfilling, she's willing to give it a shot.
She looks great.
If it meant having another person, another woman in the relationship, she was going to do that to try to hang on to him.
When a woman is in love with a man, emotionally, the feeling is, I can't live without him. And then layered on top of that, if that man is then taking care of you, and then you're in a sexual relationship that's about sadomasochism and dominance and submission, she needs this man in every single way, emotionally, financially, sexually.
It doesn't take long for new playmates to begin showing up at the dungeon.
I walked through the first door and then Bob opened the second door to the dungeon. Rachel was already completely nude with her collar on, waiting. That's when Bob said, take off your clothes, and that's what I did.
They begin with their ritualistic flogging.
So she just put her arms up and he flogged her. And actually, Bob suggested that I, you know, rub her shoulders and arms or whatever while she was getting flogged. So I did. And then she did the same thing with me.
Soon, the threesome's activities grow increasingly carnal.
So, yeah, we were all having some sex at that point.
Bob Bechara is living a dangerous game as a husband and father by day and dungeon master by night. And when his two worlds collide, the impact will destroy them all. It's the summer of 2011 in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan. And Bob Bechara and his slave mistress, Rachel, have taken their secret relationship to a heightened level, inviting other women into the dungeon to experiment with the boundaries between pleasure and pain. So far, Rachel has done everything possible to satisfy her master's demands, but she's still feeling tormented by the one thing that she wants from Bob: for him to divorce his wife and be hers alone. Finally, in June of 2011, Bob delivers the news that Rachel's been waiting for, that his divorce from his wife has been finalized.
Rachel is told that Bob has taken action, and Rachel is thrilled because this is what she has wanted from the very beginning.
Rachel's new life with Bob truly seems within reach.
But it's not. Paperwork has not been filed.
Once again, Bob is lying. And now he's in trouble.
Bob is between a rock and a hard place. He's hanging on by a thread now.
He really felt he loved her. So I think he was telling Rachel what she wanted to hear and perhaps what he wished to be true, but just didn't have the strength or wherewithal to ask his wife for a divorce.
But it's only a matter of time before Bob is trapped in his web of lies. It all begins to unravel one day when his wife, Jane, finds out he's been browsing S&M sites.
Hey, honey, how are you?
When Jane Bechara confronted her husband about finding out about his involvement in the BDSM community, her husband apparently apologized.
I'm so sorry.
And said that he would stop looking at these websites.
But Jane has no idea Bob has actually been cheating on her for months. And while she's upset he's surfing some websites, she's not ready to give up on 25 years of marriage.
I don't know what to say.
Jane Bechara convinced her husband to undergo marital counseling to try to save the marriage, try to keep the family together. And Bob did go along with it.
Jane believes at this point that Bob is doing whatever he can to try to make the marriage work. He's going to counseling. He's promised the family that he will not engage in this activity. But Jane doesn't know the whole story.
And every day, Bob's balancing act is becoming even more precarious.
He's playing both sides of the coin here. He's got a wife at home. They have money. They have status. And Jane wants to keep that going, so he's trying to appease Jane by going to counseling. And right after counseling, he's going to see his girlfriend.
Meanwhile, in late 2011, Bob and Rachel have decided to make a change to their own relationship by bringing a second submissive woman into the mix, permanently. And that November, they come across the perfect candidate, a single woman named Janet.
Janet is an attractive woman. She's professional. She's well put together. But, you know, underneath it all, she also has a great interest in being dominated in this underground world. So for Bob Bechara, Janet's really perfect.
So they were eager to meet her. Unfortunately, she lived in Oregon.
For the next few months, Bob and Rachel are in constant communication with Janet over email. Bob even sends her a special package to get Janet in the mood.
And inside the box is a collar for her to wear, and also a t-shirt that Bob says he has slept in that he wants her to have.
Bob instructs Janet that she's to wear the strap on her wrist until he arrives in Oregon to consummate their master-slave relationship, when he will personally place it on her neck.
The gift was a sign from Bob, you're mine, wear this, and apparently she did.
In January of 2012, Bob finally makes the trip to Oregon to meet Janet in person.
He ended up staying at her home, and during the course of their meeting and their relationship, she was starting to get to know him a little bit better.
Ultimately, Bob decides that Janet meets all his criteria, and he makes it official by strapping on the collar he sent her.
Basically, he is showing that he wants his presence to be felt on her, that she is no longer just Janet as she was pre these objects, but now he owns her. She is his.
Janet Lehman was going to move out from Oregon to the Detroit area, and they were going to live together as a family.
Everything is falling into place. But then, on January 20th, Rachel draws a line in the sand, for she will commit to this new polyamorous lifestyle.
We talked about it for weeks.
Rachel wants proof. She wants to know 100% that Bob Becerra is now done with Jane, emotionally, financially, legally.
How am I supposed to believe that?
She's demanding now to see the divorce papers. Are we going to have a life together, the three of us, or we're not going to have a life together?
But Bob has nothing to offer.
I'm done. I am done with this conversation.
Don't you dare walk out on me.
Bob cannot give her that proof. He doesn't have the documentation.
Eventually, the other woman stands up and says, wait a minute, you're lying to me. You've been lying to me all along. And I think that just kept bubbling and boiling and boiling and boiling up. And eventually something had to break.
5 days go by. And then, on January 25th, Detroit police make an unusual discovery.
He finds a black Mercedes SUV on the east side of Detroit. It doesn't fit. A black Mercedes would not be rolling on the east side of Detroit. This is a very rough and tumble neighborhood.
Even more disturbing is what's inside the car.
What they find is a crumpled up female in the back seat, obviously dead at the scene.
And they also notice that items within her purse have been removed.
Her belongings strewn on the back seat and the front seat and on the floorboards. The keys are also in the car.
At first, police don't know what to think. But as they investigate further, the twisted love quadrangle involving his wife, Jane, and his mistresses, Rachel, and Janet, is about to come crashing down as a gruesome murder rocks this wealthy community to its core. It's January of 2012, and just days after Rachel demanded to see her lover Bob Becerra's divorce papers, a woman's body turns up in a Detroit alley in what looks like an attempted carjacking.
Detroit police arrive on the scene the morning of the 25th, and they're trying to put the pieces of this puzzle together. They have a black Mercedes SUV in a very rough neighborhood of Detroit. They have a white female who's in the vehicle.
Surprisingly, all of the woman's belongings are still in the car, including her ID. It's Jane Becerra.
It appeared at that point that Jane Becerra was the victim of a violent crime, certainly.
Jane has been murdered. Her neck shows signs of strangulation, but there's no sign of struggle inside the car.
Police began to question whether this was a carjacking gone wrong when they realized that not only was the vehicle obviously still left behind, but it didn't appear that anything had been stolen from the victim because the contents of her purse, while they had been strewn about the car, were still there.
When police run Jane's name, they see that the night before, she was reported missing by her husband, Bob. And when he hears the news, he's devastated, along with the entire community.
When people found out that Jane Becerra had been murdered, people were just horrified. They were shocked. They were saddened.
That night, Bob and his family hold a candlelight vigil, attended by many of his friends and neighbors, and covered by the local news.
It's on the 6 o'clock news, on the 5 o'clock news, on the 11 o'clock news.
Jane Bishara was last seen about 4 p.m. on Tuesday.
I was shocked.
This community has watched in horror.
God bless you all.
And just as you would expect, people come forward to share information.
One woman in particular can't believe her eyes when she sees Bob on the evening news. It's Lynn, one of Bob's BDSM playmates.
She knows Bob Bishara. She knows him as Master Bob. They've spent time together in the dungeon. She had no idea he was married.
After I saw news break about Jane being dead and I discovered it was Bob, I went online, got whatever I could find that could be pertinent, and I called Detroit police.
Investigators are flabbergasted by what they hear about this upstanding member of the community. And then she tells them that Bob is in a full-fledged relationship with another woman involved in this taboo sexual world, Rachel.
And investigators desperately want to talk with Rachel because they want to know if she is the motive for murder.
It is an unlikely place for a murder.
Suddenly, Bob's secret BDSM lifestyle is out in the open.
Within the next 24 hours, internet postings began to pop up. Word began to spread out that Bob Bishara had been involved with this bondage lifestyle.
The community is reeling. No one can believe that this upstanding member of the Rotary and Country Clubs lived an underground life as Master Bob. But investigators are about to be shocked yet again when they finally track down Rachel.
And she lays out, apparently, the entire relationship and reveals that Bob and Rachel had a plan to begin a new life, and also reveals information about the apparent timeline that was in place.
She even tells them that she and Bob are about to close on a house together, not far from Bob and Jane's own home. It's clear to investigators that Rachel had motive to get rid of Jane, the last impediment to her dreams of a life with Bob. But she also tells them about Janet.
Recently, Bob and I decided to bring in a third party.
Investigators quickly realize that Rachel is not the only woman apparently in Bob's life, that there's a third woman. And this woman is interested in beginning a new life as a poly couple, if you will.
Now the police have three possible suspects. Bob's mistresses, Rachel and Janet. Not to mention the cheating husband himself.
They are working nonstop behind the scenes because they're really trying to figure out exactly what is going on here. What was the relationship between Bob and his wife? What's the relationship between Bob and these other women?
Meanwhile, public pressure is starting to build.
There was a lot of speculation in the media, on the street, in the bars, people just talking. What's going on with this case? Why haven't the police made an arrest?
And then on January 31st, the case takes an unexpected turn.
Days after the murder, this man makes his way into the Grosse Pointe Park police station, Joe Gantz.
Joe is a very towering man, very domineering man, a big man.
What can I help you with?
Well, I call him a gentle giant. He's about 6'6", probably goes about 270, and he's strong. He's tough.
He says he knows Bob Bishara, that he's his handyman.
He has a confession to make.
And he had told them that he is the one who murdered Jane Bishara.
First of all, that doesn't happen. It's just an extreme rarity. When people do walk in and confess to a murder, usually they're nuts. Usually it's not believable. They're just confessing because people like to confess to things for whatever the reason.
I hit her and she fell to the ground.
Joe swears to investigators that it's true, that he committed the murder by pushing Jane down and stepping on her neck to crush her windpipe. It's so bizarre and random, police have a hard time believing any of it.
He also has limited mental capabilities, so his story changes a little bit each time he's telling it. He's easily flustered.
I have no idea what the investigators could have been thinking, because their sights initially had been set on the husband, and here comes this guy who says, no, I actually did it.
But what they're about to learn will provide yet another gut-wrenching twist to this lurid investigation. It's January 31st, 2012, in Grosse Pointe Park, Michigan, and a handyman named Joe Gentz has just confessed to the murder of Jane Bechara. But why would he have done it? According to Joe, it wasn't his idea.
And then he started blaming Bob Bechara.
Bob asked me to kill her.
Joe tells police that he killed Jane because Bob made him do it.
Joe Gentz asserts that Bob Bechara wanted his wife killed in order for him to start another life with Rachel and Janet.
His mistresses in the secret sadomasochistic world. It all started the previous fall, says Joe, when Bob first approached him with the idea of killing Jane, offering to pay him nearly $2,000 for completing the job.
Gentz, like, thinks he's not real serious. He's got to be playing.
But then, Joe claims that on the evening of January 24th, 2012, Bob summoned Joe to his house to move some boxes when the couple began arguing.
She's upset that Bob hasn't taken his golf clubs to the country club.
Oh, hey, Bob, there you are.
And that's when, Joe says, Bob suddenly gave him an order.
Do it now! Kill her!
So Joe kind of looks at him, says, you know, what are you talking about? Kill her now, kill her now.
Just kill her now!
So he takes a karate chop and he knocks her down.
Joe then hesitated, but according to him, he no longer had a choice.
Finish her!
Bob pulls a gun out, Gentz says, and points at him.
Kill her!
And that's apparently when Joe takes the step to end Jane's life.
Takes his foot, puts it on her neck, steps down, and it crunches. She's dead.
Then Joe says they loaded Jane's body into the back of her SUV, and Bob ordered him to dispose of the body and the car.
So he takes her a couple miles away, pulls into an alleyway, gets out of the car, throws the keys in the car, and walks away and goes to McDonald's. And that's really the end of the story.
Investigators are intrigued by Joe's story, but with no actual evidence, they find his wild tale hard to believe.
At the end of that period, they just weren't convinced by his story, and they let him go without charging him.
Joe's accusations get back to Bob Bechara. And on February 3rd, the day the police released Joe, Bob's lawyers lay out a very different scenario about what Bob thinks happened the day Jane was killed.
They said that Joe Gentz was a handyman who had done some work for Bob Bechara, but they said he had been harassing Bob Bechara for money.
They claimed that Joe must have come to Bob and Jane's house to ask for the cash he was owed, but that Bob wasn't home and Jane was.
Bob theorized that when Jane told Joe Gentz to leave her property, that Joe may have snapped. And that's when he attacked Jane Bechara and ultimately killed her.
Get out of my house!
At that point, it really was the word of Bob Bechara against the word of Joe Gentz and who you were going to believe.
But when investigators compare both stories side by side, there's a key detail in Joe's story that stands out. Joe told them that as he and Bob were moving Jane's body, her shirt rode up slightly, exposing her breasts.
She's not wearing a bra. And Bechara says, oh, baby, I'm sorry, and pulls her blouse down, covering up her breast again.
And when they check official reports, it turns out that indeed, Jane Bechara was not wearing a bra the night she was killed. Investigators see this as a bizarre detail that would have been hard to invent, and it seems to lend credibility to Joe's account.
So it's important from the standpoint of it's real. This really did happen.
The police end up able to verify much of Joe's story.
For investigators, the accuracy of Joe's confession now seems to outweigh their initial skepticism. On March 2, 2012, 5 weeks after Jane's death, police arrest Joe Gentz and charge him with first-degree murder and conspiracy to commit murder.
Once Joe Gentz was arrested, the suspicion on Bob did not subside. So Bob was still trying to live a normal lifestyle the best he could, but increasingly the public and the media was becoming more and more skeptical of his story.
But investigators have no evidence other than Joe's confession that implicates Bob in the murder of his wife. Then in June of 2012, this twisted case takes yet another bizarre turn.
After Joe Gentz is in custody and awaiting the court hearings in the Bechara killing, yet another person shows up.
The man claims that Bob Bechara is trying to hire him to silence Joe Gentz while he's behind bars.
I've been in contact with Bob. I'm a friend of his. I run an appliance shop. He wants me to kill Joe Gentz in jail, and he wants to pay me money for it.
The police are stunned. They now have a concrete reason to arrest Bob Bechara. But they'll need some hard evidence of Bob's intentions.
So the police were able to convince him to wear a wire during his meetings with Bob Bechara.
They get the whole thing on tape as Bob confirms his sinister plan to have Joe Gentz killed. With that evidence, police finally arrest Bob Bechara, charging him on June 27th, 2012, with solicitation to commit murder. 5 months later, on November 12th, Bob's trial begins, and the jury hears two sides to why Bob tried to hire someone to kill Joe in jail.
The first thing was that perhaps that Joe Gentz had information on Bob, was going to testify against him, and therefore Bob wanted him dead. The second theory was that, hey, this was the guy that killed my wife. I wanted to get him. I wanted him dead because he killed my wife.
He tells the court that he admits to hiring somebody to kill Joe Gentz, but he only does that out of the goodness of his heart because he wants to avenge his wife's death.
Bob Bechara eventually pleads guilty to the charges and is sentenced to a minimum of 6 years in prison. But the case doesn't end there. While Bob is behind bars, investigators continue to search for any evidence that Bob directed Joe to kill his wife. And they hit pay dirt thanks to Bob's cell phone.
The Wayne County prosecutors, investigators, went back and they did search warrants on the phone records between Joe Gentz and Bob Bechara. When they opened up those phone records, there's just call after call after call after call between Bob and Joe.
Based on this new evidence and testimony from Joe Gentz and others, on September 20th, 2013, police arrest Bob Bechara in jail and charge him with the first-degree murder of his wife, Jane.
Bob Bechara was in custody for the solicitation to murder Joe Gentz, and they announced the charges that he was a co-conspirator in his wife's murder. With everything that the prosecution had amassed, they had Joe Gentz's testimony, they had information from Rachel, they knew about all the phone calls that Bob had been making, they knew that Bob had been cheating on his wife. When they were able to put it all together, it made a pretty convincing case that Bob Bechara was out to try to kill his wife to start a new life with other women.
Investigators may never learn exactly what happened and why, but nothing can undo the evil that tore the Bechara family apart.
To see that her life would end up like this, not only that her husband would end up cheating on her, but cheating on her in a public way and in a seedy, unseemly manner, and then to meet her demise in such a horrible, violent way, is just a terrible tragedy, not only for the people that knew and loved Jane Bechara, but for the community at large. We lost a tremendous individual when Jane Bechara passed away.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Sick of being upsold at gyms?
My guy, you're currently a base member. For $90 more, I can upgrade you to our Shred membership. For $130 more, you'll be a swole member. And for just $300 more, you'll reach Sweat Platinum.
At Planet Fitness, you'll get energy without the upsell. Never pushy, always free fitness training and equipment for every workout. It's fitness that fits your budget. Join Planet Fitness for just $1 down and $10 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, May 10th. See Home Club for details.